Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into some pretty fundamental math, looking at a key 1988 paper by Mark Friedlin. It tackles how complex systems, think chemical reactions or heat flow, behave when there's constant tiny randomness involved. So you've got these models, reaction-diffusion equations they're called, right? They describe things spreading out and interacting. The big question is, what happens when you add just a tiny bit of persistent random noise, something almost, well, almost unnoticeable?
That's exactly it. That's the mission. See, real systems always have noise, little fluctuations, randomness. Mathematically, we represent this with a small factor, let's call it epsilon, and we're not really focused on the immediate jiggle it causes. That's usually tiny. What's fascinating is the long-term picture. How does that little bit of noise, acting over, say, millennia, shape the system's ultimate fate?
And the core finding, which is kind of mind-bending, is this quasi-deterministic approximation. It basically says this tiny randomness doesn't just add chaos. Paradoxically, it seems to filter the possibilities and lead to a surprisingly predictable outcome in the very long run.
Right. It's a great place to start. So these systems, we're talking about reaction diffusion equations, or RDEs. Let's just quickly break that down.
Okay. Diffusion, that sounds like things spreading out, smoothing over, like dropping ink in water.
Exactly. That's the spreading part. Mathematically, it often involves terms like the Laplacian, that triangle symbol. It captures how concentrations or temperatures even out over space. Then you've got the reaction part. This is the local activity. It's often nonlinear. Think chemical reactions happening at each point, populations growing or competing, that sort of thing.
So you put them together and you get this evolving picture, right? The state of the whole system, temperature everywhere, concentration everywhere, changing over time and space.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And for scientists using these models, the million-dollar question is often, what happens eventually?
Yeah.
As time goes to infinity, does it settle down?
To like a steady state, or maybe it keeps oscillating like a wave pattern.
Yeah, those are the typical long-term behaviors people look for in the deterministic case, the case without noise. But add that randomness.
And it becomes a random field. The solution itself is probabilistic.
It does, and that's where things get tricky. Calculating the full statistics is often computationally impossible. That's why looking at the limit, when the noise is vanishingly small, becomes so powerful, it gives us an approximation.
Okay, so how does this noise actually get into the system? The paper mentions a few ways, doesn't it?
It does, and the physics of the noise matters. The simplest is maybe additive noise. You just add a random term, like a fluctuating force, directly into the equations at every point.
Like white noise.
Often modeled as white noise. Yeah, though mathematically that needs careful handling with stochastic PDEs.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes the nonlinear reaction term itself might depend on some background field that's fluctuating really fast. That's oscillating perturbations.
Okay, so the environment itself is noisy.
Right. Or maybe the system's interior is perfectly deterministic, but the randomness comes in only at the edges. Boundary condition noise.
Got it. Different physical sources lead to different mathematical setups.
But here's the absolutely crucial point about timescales. Over any finite time interval short times, the noisy solution stays very close to the original non-noisy one. That's just standard probability, like the law of large numbers or central limit theorem effects. The small wiggles tend to average out locally in time.
Okay, so for a short experiment, you might barely see the effect of the noise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, and this is the core insight, if you let it run for an extremely long time, that tiny persistent noise starts to dominate the selection of the final state.
Wait, so the infinitesimal noise becomes decisive given enough time? How does that work? It seems like it should just stay small.
Think of it like this. The noise constantly probes the system's stability.
Yeah.
Over immense timescales, it has the chance to accumulate in just the right way to push the system over barriers it otherwise wouldn't cross.
Okay, that makes some sense. It accumulates.
Which leads us right to this quasi-deterministic idea. Imagine the original non-noisy system has, say, three different stable states it could end up in, like three different valleys in an energy landscape.
Right, multiple possible long-term outcomes.
Now you add the noise, even tiny noise, epsilon. What happens is epsilon gets smaller and smaller, but you wait longer and longer. The system doesn't just randomly fluctuate between those valleys forever. Instead, the probability distribution, the long-term statistics, starts to concentrate almost entirely near just one of those stable states.
Which one?
The most stable one. The one that's hardest for the noise to push the system out of. The system spends overwhelmingly more time there than anywhere else.
Ah, so the noise effectively breaks the symmetry between the possible stable states and picks a winner based on stability.
Precisely. The long-term outcome becomes predictable. or quasi-deterministic, even though the path taken involves random fluctuations. The final destination is largely determined.
That's really interesting. Does it predict anything else?
Yes, it does. It also predicts the order of transitions. If the noise does manage to kick the system out of one stable state, say state A, there's typically a unique next stable state, B, that it's most likely to transition to.
So like a preferred pathway through the state space, dictated by the relative stability of the states.
Exactly. There's a hierarchy. The system doesn't just jump randomly. It follows a predictable sequence of escapes, A to B, maybe B to C, and so on, until it reaches the globally most stable state.
The timing of the jump itself is still random, though.
The exact moment, yes. But the average time you have to wait for that jump, or rather the logarithm of that average time as the noise gets small, turns out to be non-random. It's determined by the stability barriers.
And this is where the mathematics of large deviations comes in, measuring the probability of these rare noise-driven events.
That's the key theoretical tool. Large deviation theory provides the framework to calculate the probability of unlikely fluctuations that are just strong enough to push the system over these stability barriers.
Okay, let's dig into how we measure that stability. The paper mentions a simpler case first, potential fields.
Right. This is a helpful analogy. Imagine the system state corresponds to a point on a landscape, and there's a function, the potential, which represents the height or energy at that point. If the system dynamics always tend to decrease this potential, like a ball rolling downhill, then we call it a potential system.
So in that case, it's pretty intuitive, isn't it? The noise might jiggle the ball around, but over the long term, it's going to spend most of its time
at the bottom of the deepest valley, the point where the potential function U reaches its absolute minimum.
Right. The noise helps it explore, but ultimately gravity or the potential gradient pulls it to the lowest point.
Exactly. The long-term probability distribution, the invariant measure, becomes sharply peaked around that global minimum. The other stable states, the local minima, are eventually escaped.
Okay, that makes sense for potential systems. But you mentioned most real RDEs aren't like that. There's no simple downhill rule.
Correct. For many systems, especially complex biological or chemical ones, there isn't a single function whose gradient drives the dynamics. So how do you define the most stable state then?
Yeah, how do you build that landscape?
We need a more general concept. Instead of a potential value at each state, we use something called the action functional, often denoted S.
Action functional. Okay, what does that measure?
It doesn't measure the state itself, but the cost or effort required for the system to follow a specific path or trajectory through the state space over time. Specifically, it measures the likelihood of the noise pushing the system along that path.
So it's related to how much the path deviates from the non-noisy dynamics.
Precisely. The action functional, in this context, essentially quantifies how improbable a given trajectory is, how much work the random noise has to do to make the system follow that specific path, deviating from its natural deterministic course.
So a path with low action is relatively easy for the noise to achieve, while a path with high action is extremely unlikely.
We've got it. And the key insight is that the transition from one stable state, say A, to another state, B, will almost always happen along the path connecting A and B that has the minimum possible action, the path of least resistance for the noise.
Ah, okay. So the action functional defines the height of the barriers between stable states, even without a simple potential landscape. The minimum action needed to escape a state tells you how stable it is.
Exactly. It provides that non-random hierarchy. The state requiring the highest minimum action to escape from is the most stable one.
Which brings us to the practical calculation. How long does a stable state typically last before the noise kicks it out?
This is calculated using the mean exit time. If you have a stable equilibrium point, let's call it P0, inside some region D, the mean exit time is the average time it takes for the noise to push the system starting near P0 out of the region D.
And this connects back to the action functional.
Directly. The paper shows that the logarithm of this mean exit time as the noise epsilon goes to zero is determined by the minimum action required to go from the stable point P0 to the boundary of the region D.
So you find the easiest escape path in terms of action.
And the action value along that path gives you a number. Let's call it V0. This V0 basically represents the height of the stability barrier protecting that state. A larger V0 means an exponentially longer expected time before the system escapes. It quantifies the stability in a very concrete, calculable way.
Wow. So we start with continuous equations and random noise, But the long-term stability boils down to these discrete barrier heights, V0, calculated using the action functional. The noise forces the system to find the state protected by the highest barrier.
That's the essence of the quasi-deterministic approximation. It finds order hidden within the long-term effects of chaos. It tells you where the system will likely end up and how stable it is there.
Okay, so that framework seems quite powerful, but you mentioned the paper touches on something more complex at the end, with quick oscillating noise.
Yes, that's an important caveat and extension. What if the noise isn't relatively smooth, but is fluctuating extremely rapidly, much faster than the typical timescales of the reaction and diffusion processes themselves? Think of it like a very high-frequency vibrations.
How does that change things?
In many cases like that, the system's long-term behavior isn't governed by the original RDE directly, but by an averaged version of it. The system effectively responds only to the time average of the fast noise.
Okay, so it smooths out the fast fluctuations. That sounds simpler again.
In one sense, yes, you get an effective deterministic system again. However, the crucial difference is that the actual solution process, the state dollary evolving under this fast noise, is often not Markovian anymore.
Not Markovian, meaning its future state depends not just on its current state, but also on its past history. It has memory.
Exactly. The standard large deviation theory and the simple quasi-deterministic picture we've discussed rely heavily on the Markov property, that the future depends only on the present. When you lose that, well, things get more complicated.
So the averaging simplifies the drift, the overall direction, but introduces memory effects into the fluctuations around that average.
That's a good way to put it. The generator of the process becomes more complex, potentially depending on history.
Which leads us to the final thought then. If you have this fast noise and the system develops memory, becoming non-Markovian.
Right. The question then becomes, how much of that quasi-deterministic structure, the concentration on the most stable state, the predictable transition hierarchy, actually survives? Does the memory introduce entirely new long-term behaviors, perhaps pathways or trapping mechanisms that aren't captured just by minimizing the action functional of the average system?
Could the history itself create new kinds of effective stability or instability?
That's the frontier. It suggests that while the 1988 work gave us a fundamental understanding of how noise selects states, the nature of complex noise, like these fast oscillations leading to non-Markovian behavior, might hold even more surprises about the long-term dynamics.
A fascinating challenge. It really highlights how deep the interplay between randomness and deterministic dynamics can be. Thanks for unpacking that with us.
My pleasure. It's a rich area.
Indeed. And definitely gives you something to think about regarding the hidden structures within seemingly chaotic systems. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.